world was very different to the one that we all think we're living in, and it's controlled by very different forces to the ones we think are controlling it. Reality that we think we're looking at that seems so solid and seems so total is actually just a tiny, tiny frequency range, which scientists call visible light, which our five senses can access and our eyes can access. I've noticed over the years that if you don't ask the big questions, you've got no chance of getting the big answers. It's almost a feeling you can touch in the air. You look all around you, but nobody's there. It's been a long time now since you've been aware that someone is watching you. Chances come, you'll look for the catches, but there will be none. Remember before you grab the money and run, that someone is watching you. Before you run and hide, he's gonna get you. You got no choice. People symbolically with their head down and not asking the big questions. You know, I've had people over the years say to me, look, mate, it may be interesting, but, you know, I live in the real world. I've got to pay the mortgage at the end of the month. And I understand that, but understanding the big answers to the big questions is fundamental to breaking the cycle of enslavement that has your head down trying to meet the check at the end of the month. Real world, it's an illusory world, and once you realize it's illusory, you can take control of your life back, because illusions only control you when you think they're real, and most people think the illusions are real, and so the illusions control them, and so it goes on. Offers the answers to end this enslavement, because the enslavement of humanity is the enslavement of the human mind, or, as I'm understanding more and more as the years pass, the imposing upon humans and the manipulation upon humans of a state of mind program rather than a state of consciousness which is eternal and is beyond the program.
David Icke is an English writer and public speaker who since 1990 has devoted himself to researching what he calls who and what is really controlling the world. Describing himself as the most controversial speaker and author in the world, he has written over 16 books explaining his views, characterized as New Age conspiracism, and has attracted a substantial following across the political spectrum. His books have been translated into 8 languages, and he runs a website that receives 600,000 hits a week. His lecture tours, during which he speaks up for 8 hours at a time, attracts audiences of 30,000. Well, David, being the having so many books and coming to the direction that you've come from, a lot of it had to do with conspiracy, and you were going to explain. We would kind of like you to explain, you know, how conspiracy is such a term you wanted to use, Channon.
Well, it's kind of like a, you know, bugaboo word. It's a pejorative, right? I mean, but people throw it out, and people throw it out like it means that it's a bunch of bunk. I mean, you've got this movie with Mel Gibson called Conspiracy Theory, and it's just full of all kinds of, you know, silliness.
Yes, go ahead.
This perception of those that are uncovering another version of what's going on in the world, they're not being dismissed like they were before. Quite the opposite. There's a massive awakening going on where people are seeing, hey, I thought the world was like this, but now I realize it wasn't.
Well, you know something, David, I've found that it doesn't matter what direction we seem to be coming at this truth. it seems to be that whether we start with, in my instance, I kind of started with some of the New Age things, and then now I'm coming back and reexamining the facts that has been an illusion because we've been lied to in so many different ways because they've kind of created our own existence in a manner that we're now finding out that wasn't true at all. So can you elaborate on that, or does that ring true with you at all?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I was saying years ago that we enter this web, if you like, from different directions. That you can come into it by investigating UFO activity and the suppression of information about it. You can come in from what is termed the New Age direction, which is seeing that mainstream religions are part of the problem and realizing that we are eternal consciousness and not just our bodies. You can come into it by investigating the banking scams. Or you can come into it the way I did 20 years ago when I wanted to know who am I, where am I, what is the nature of reality, what is this world, and who really controls it. And you enter the web at that point of that, if you like, at that entry gate of the subject that you start with. But if you continue to walk into the web and you continue to open your mind to the connections that connect out from your original reason for entering the web, then you start to connect with all these others. And eventually, the more you go along, the more what you've come in for, what's going on in the world, who am I, where am I, starts to connect into banking scams. It starts to connect into the UFO cover-up. It starts to connect into government manipulation, manipulation of wars, the suppression of knowledge about the nature of reality. And you start to realize that this is not a series of conspiracies. It's one conspiracy. And this is one of the things that skeptics say, and good luck to them, they're right to be skeptical, although it's interesting that people say people need to be skeptical. No, they don't. People need to question. What a skeptic does is not question, but starts from a premise that what they believe at that time is true. So anything that challenges that belief system must therefore not be true. And if I'm going to preserve my belief system to myself, then I have to demolish and get dismissed and ridicule those people that are presenting a version of reality in the world that is different to mine. That's basically what the Skeptic Society is doing. They're frightened little people, terrified that actually what they believe might not be true. So it's like it's a version of shut up, don't want to hear it. But when you you look at this with an open mind and you see the connections, you realize that unlike what skeptics say, which is you see conspiracies everywhere, there's a conspiracy here, there's a conspiracy there, there's a conspiracy there, you see conspiracies everywhere. No, mate, there's one conspiracy to enslave humanity in a centralized global Orwellian state with a microchip population and total control and surveillance 24/7, and all these different conspiracies are actually different masks on this one face, and they all connect into it. So I've met so many people over the years that have come into this whole understanding of the connections from a specific subject that they started out with.
I think you hit it right on the nail on the head with saying it's all one conspiracy. And instead of trying to say, well, there's 500 different conspiracies and they all, you know, lead in one direction, but it's actually quite the reverse. And you're excellent at getting out there and putting that information out so that people can connect up and start realizing this is happening.
Well, and of course, what we try to do is to make the connection of how the information cannot just be a piece of bad news, but something that can actually empower them. And so the question is, you know, what's the strategy for coping with the information and actually turning it around, using it, and, you know, getting back on top of it, dehypnotizing or disindoctrinating yourself?
Well, that's the point, really, and I differ greatly from some areas of what are called the New Age. I mean, the number of people who've said to me over the years, not so much now, mind, but years ago, it's all negative what you're saying, and you mustn't say it, because you must only say positive things. Well, negative, positive, we've created a polarity already, a duality. But the thing is that the question needs to be asked, if we really want to have a spiritual awakening, which is happening anyway, because there's vibrational change, but on the level I'm talking about, then we must remove the resistance, and expose the calculated resistance to that awakening. Because these things go side by side. Yes, people need to open their minds to the full nature of infinite consciousness that we are, but on the other hand, we also need to address the systematic structure that's been set up in our human society to stop that awakening happening. Because the more we expose that, and the more we dismantle that, the more and faster people are going to be awakening, because you're reducing the power of the resistance to that awakening. The manipulation of perception, the destabilization of what I call the body computer through food additives and additives to water and drink, the electromagnetic microwave soup that we live in the cities now, and all that's going on that level. So, and the suppression of scientific knowledge about the fact that everything's connected and we're all one consciousness and this is just a virtual reality we're experiencing at this time. All these things are keeping people in the box and stopping them awakening. So the awakening and the exposure of that which is seeking to suppress the awakening, these two have to go side by side, not either or, but both together. And it seems that a lot of people seem to be using, oh, that's negative, as an excuse to keep their head down and not have to get symbolically their hands dirty addressing this control system, as well as talking the spiritual way too. And I think that a lot of people are in denial of how the world is manipulated and controlled, because frankly they don't want to face the plight that we're in, and therefore have to address it. It's like, I don't want this to be true, so I'm going to kid myself that it isn't.
Well, I'm not going to say that I'm New Age. I was looking at it. And what yeah. It really came out to mean to me, because that exactly what you're saying is I was having a hard time trying to argue or defend the fact that you have to look at some of the ugly factors that are going on out there in the world and to address them. And yet at the same time, yeah, they're right in a certain respect that if you deal with negative, you're going to attract negative, or you deal with positive, you attract positive. But there's something else going on there, and I think you're addressing it in what you're saying.
Well, this is what I feel. You know, if you ignore something, then what you're ignoring goes on unchallenged. And we have been through very distinct stages in this that I've seen anyway over the last 20 years. The first one was that people who were putting this information out, when I started, very, very few, they were dismissed and ridiculed and all the rest of it. And then particularly the turn of the 21st century, particularly after 9/11 and with all the Iraq stuff, people started to open their minds to the fact that actually maybe they were being lied to on a much bigger scale than they thought before. And people started to open their minds to the fact the world was like they thought it was. What I'm now beginning to see, we're at this cusp of stage three, which is when that awakening awareness is starting to impact on events. And my goodness, is that going to go on now in the next few years? And so it's a very exciting time to be around. But if we have to face what we are facing, otherwise nothing changes. You know, it's like I've said in my new book, when your head's in the sand, you have to be on your knees. And people think that if they put their head in the sand, well, they can just carry on and everything will be fine and they don't have to face what's going on. But their backside's still in the air and the tornado's still coming. Now, if you lift your head out of the sand, you can turn round, face the situation, a tornado is coming, and you can take avoiding action. That is a positive thing. You're empowering yourself to influence in a very, very positive way. Keep using this word positive, negative, all that stuff is much more to this than that. But you can take avoiding action and influence your own experience and life. But if you keep your head in that sand, then eventually, although ignorance is bliss only for a while, your backside and that tornado are going to make contact. And this is why we need to. It's like in the days of the Nazis and stuff. Do nothing, do nothing. Oh, it's not my problem. Oh, they're taking the Jews. Oh, it doesn't matter. Oh, they're taking the communists. It doesn't matter. They're taking the disabled. It doesn't matter. Because I'm none of those things.
Okay.
And then eventually something goes on your front door late at night, and you go, oh dear, who can that be this late? You know, and suddenly the reality is now your reality. But who's around now to talk for you? No one, because they've all been taken out before while you were looking the other way and saying, well, it's not my problem. So we have to come together here and make sure that everybody's problem is everybody's problem.
Right then. So from a more practical, personal perspective, how about if you tell what you have done, perhaps nutritionally, in some of the books you mentioned some of your health pursuits and how that has helped you, and also as far as avoiding this soup of microwaves and other energies in a physical sense, and what you feel that has done as far as, you know, how does that figure into your ability to see clearer? And do you feel like where you are now in Britain is a place that you get the kind of lower level of? I mean, aren't you probably surrounded as much as anyone over there? What do you do in order to handle that?
Oh yeah, on this little island of the British Isles, we're really bombarded by all this stuff because we have a massive population compared to the amount of land. There's still lots of open space, but compared with most countries, not that much. It's very urban across great swathes of this country. But there's a few things that come out of that. I talked a few minutes ago about different stages, and there's different stages in this, in the sense that you can first of all realize on one level, because there's multi levels of awareness, therefore multi levels of experienced reality, you can realize that filling your body with toxic things and what have you is not good, and it can affect you mentally, emotionally, and physically. But as you expand your consciousness, and this is where we're going, you go beyond a vibrational connection with that level of experience to the point where basically you can eat what you like and you'll be fine. This is where we're going. I'll give you an example. There was a guy, an academic in America, story I read a few times, who was doing experiments into LSD in the 60s, and one of the things he did was go out east and gave LSD to people and monitored their behavior and their reaction. And then there were people who, these kind of mystic people, who he gave it to, and nothing happened. And then he increased the dose to heroic doses. They should have been on another planet somewhere in another universe, and they just smiled at him, because their consciousness was more powerful than the drug that they were being given. And I've talked to people who were in government mind control programs in America, where they compartmentalized the mind into different self-contained units, which they call alters, who were in a drug state in one alter, one personality mind box, mind prison within the honeycomb of their mind that these programs create. And when they came out, they were switched out of that part of their mind that had experienced taking the drug into another part of the mind that had not, the effect of the drug disappeared immediately. I've talked to people who have been drunk in one compartment of their mind, and when they're switched to another through hypnotic keys, etc., they're stone cold sober immediately.
That's interesting.
And I mean, a number of them have said to me, when we had operations, we were terrified that in the middle of the operation, we wouldn't switch to another altar because we would have woke up. The anesthetic would have had no effect. And so the power of the mind, and particularly the power of consciousness, a word I use for the higher levels of awareness, beyond mind and beyond body, they have the ability, once they're freed from their programming and their preconceived idea, that they can overcome anything. You see, when you have people walking through fire and not getting burned, how can that happen? I mean, we're physical beings, so we're told. So therefore, your feet must burn into contact with the fire and the coals. But once you go into a different state of awareness, a different state of consciousness, you can walk through those coals and not get burned. Why? Because an illusion can only burn an illusion if you think it can. You know, and we are put into lower levels of awareness systematically, the way that society is structured, the way that we're programmed from cradle to grave through the various means of education and media and all the rest of it, we are put in such a low level of consciousness that we are experiencing a cause and effect of, if you eat this, then this will be the reaction. If you drink this, this will be the reaction. But when you go into higher levels of awareness beyond that, then that cause and effect doesn't happen in the same way. The consciousness is too powerful for whatever you are eating or drinking. So that's where we're going. And in the same way, by the way, I've been saying for years that what we call alternative healing, whether it's acupuncture, reflexology, whatever it is, that's not the end. That's the stepping stone. The start, well, at least in the modern times, not before, but the start in modern times was the Rockefeller family created scalpel and drug medical system, which it imposed on the world with under orders from the Rothschild dynasty. So all the way through, it's scalpel or drug. There's something wrong with me. Scalpel or drug. Something wrong with me. Scalpel or drug. I've got a problem with my mind, my emotions. Ah, drug. Then we started to reach this point where more and more people, and of course it's exploding now, started to look at alternative ways to the scalpel and the drug. But where we're going as this awakening and this breakdown of the mind prisons goes on is the point where we're going to heal ourselves through our own power of consciousness. That's where we're going. And it's an incredibly exciting time, but a very, very challenging one, because as this awakening happens, of course, the control system is desperately trying to keep the lid on it. The first book I ever wrote on these subjects when I had my awakening 20 years ago was actually called Truth Vibrations, because I learned 20 years ago through various means that a vibrational change was coming that was going to A, act like a spiritual alarm clock to wake people up from their amnesia, which is what we've been put into, and B, was going to bring all that's been hidden to the surface where people could see it. Now, 20 years ago, there was no evidence of either. 20 years later, my goodness, there it is. What we're seeing are these truth vibrations teasing open this density of that we've been manipulated into by fear and guilt and frustration and all the rest of it. And also, at the same time, these truth vibrations are bringing to the surface all the stuff that's been hidden and saying to people, look what's been going on while you've been asleep. And so... you know, we're in a wonderful, wonderful period of human experience, very challenging, but ultimately this world is going to change dramatically for the better in my lifetime.
Now, is this what you get into in your new book?
Oh, in great detail. I mean, because it's 714 pages long, it's an enormous work of dot connecting. So it goes across the great spectrum of subjects and fits them together. And when you do, you go... it's actually, the world is so complex, but actually it's really quite simple when you see the structure. And this the whole area of the awakening, the truth vibrations. Oh yes, I go into it big time because it's happening. I've experienced it. I over the last 20 years, I've seen it happen before my eyes. I've been to 50 countries researching this. It's happening everywhere, everywhere. Not the majority yet, but my goodness, is it expanding by the day?
Well, as you do your travels, and you know, because people tend to look at those who've gone ahead a little and whose research definitely is far a front of their own, they must be asking you, and you must see people in various stages of their own transition. So, what is the answer when someone's asking, well, what's the first step? You know, I'm basically a very standard American. You know, I watch TV a lot. I eat the standard American diet, or, you know, not necessarily American, but, you know, if they're very caught up in their own body computer and they're not really developing the consciousness that you describe but are very much being led along with mind programs, as you say, I mean, what have you found is the most, I mean, surely it varies with everybody, and I know in your books you say it's not all about you, and yet, the curiosity is for sure there. What do you find for yourself and then those that you give a little advice to is the most important first steps? I mean, is it not nutrition? Is it more of just meditation? Or
I think it's intent. You see, all genius is simple. There is no genius in complexity. If it seems complex, then you've not got to the core of what's going on, because all genius sees the simple in the complex. And in terms of creation and consciousness, you're looking at the ultimate genius. So therefore, in its basic form, it must be dead simple. And what happens is that we think that to overcome something or to do something or achieve something, it has to be complex. No, it has to be simple because it's genius. And it's very much like the scene in the first Matrix movie where they're in the room. Do you want the blue pill or the red pill? The first point is intent, and not an intellectual intent. Oh yeah, I'd like to wake up and know what's going on in the world and change my life. And that's it. No, it's an intent that is your being. I want to know. I want to be what I really am. I want to wake up to my true nature and the true nature of reality, and I will follow any path necessary to do that. End of story. Now what you've done, because we are projecting an energy field, electromagnetic energy field, which is a vibrational waveform information construct, if you like, which carries our state of being at any one time. And therefore, that will, through a process I call vibrational magnetism, it will attract to you other energy fields that connect with what you're putting out. This is why you will create your partners, your relationships of various kinds, your jobs, your opportunities or lack of them, your location. You're all creating this by what you're putting out, because everything is a vibrational field. Therefore, your location is a vibrational field, your partner is a vibrational field, etc., and you draw towards you a reflection of you.
When you talk
in the people, places, and ways of life that you attract, just very very quickly. So when you project this intent, I want to change, what happens immediately if you mean it rather than just say it? There is a tremendous shift in your energetic state. Now, what that starts to do immediately, or very quickly anyway, I experience it, so many people do, now you're putting out a different vibrational field. And those in your life, whether it's locations, whether it's jobs, partners, relationships of all kinds, family even, that are not syncing with your new energetic state, they will, in your play out holographic everyday so-called physical experience, start to drift out of your life in many ways. Other people, locations, opportunities, jobs, whatever you, will come in. And what tends to happen at this point is people perceive this in the experienced level, the holographic level, as, oh, my life's falling apart. Oh, my goodness, what's happening to my life? I went through this massively and in public in Britain, and it was a real challenge. But what you realize is that, hey, what are you moaning about? Because you wanted to transform, right? Yeah. Okay. Well, how can you transform if you stay as you were? And for the new to come in, the old has to go. And we experience this as our lives falling apart. If through the experience of others who've gone before in the terms of the experience, people can go through it in the knowledge that, hey, it's a challenge and I don't like it, but I know it's necessary to get where I want to be, then it's a lot easier to get through than for people like me who 20 years ago, when I'm going, what on earth is going on in my life? My whole life's falling apart. One day I'm a respected television presenter with the BBC. The next, everyone's laughing at me in the street. But when I look back at that period of experience, challenging a nightmare as it was when I experienced it, I say thank you, because it set me free. It set me free of so much. So it's the intent. That's the first thing. Second thing is to keep with it when things aren't very pleasant, because so many people, they say, I want to do this. And they mean it up to a point, and then their life starts to fall apart, and they go, oh, if that's spirituality, you can stick it. I don't want anything to do with this. This is no fun. And they go back to the old life, and everything stops. If you keep with it, eventually you're going to come through and go, wow, I'm so glad I did that.
Well, a lot of you people like you or Alex Jones and that sort get accused of being fear mongers and that sort. And actually, that's not what you guys are doing at all, because you're not fearing it and exposing it. And the ones that are in fear are the ones that are accusing you of that, correct?
You are so right. Do you know, the number of people I hear say, we've got to let go of fear. And then they say, you're frightening people. Well, hold on a second. I thought we were letting go of fear here. You know, information, awareness, knowledge is never negative. Ignorance is negative, because that's what puts you in the box and allows you to be controlled by the few. And you know, again, everything is a choice. Everything is a point of perception. I look at all this information coming out, some of it very, very unpleasant in terms of what's been going on in the world, and I go, hallelujah, brother and sister. I mean, it's coming out. We're seeing it now. What a great time. The hidden is no longer having the power over us that it had before, because it's increasingly no longer hidden. Great. This is part of the awakening, fundamentally part of the awakening. And to say it's negative and you're frightening people, well, that's a reflection of the person saying it. You're absolutely right, Melody, and not the person doing it. I'm not frightened of this stuff. Not at all. All the consequences.
Well, I think that's reflected a lot, and just you watch all the laws and that sort, and things that are written about, and you keep uncovering more and more ugly things, and you get to the point when you realize, you know, how can you top that ugly, and then you finally have to realize, well, you know, you become numb to it to a point and realize that, you know, okay, now what am I going to do about it?
Yeah, people have got to realize is that, you know, if you sit cross-legged on the mountain above everything, then that's okay for a while. But what all this stuff still going on? And the real, I don't like the word warrior, but the real spiritually committed people, spiritually being, you know, I want to come from a point of view of consciousness and not just mind-body, they're the ones that go down into the dark places. They're the ones that go down into the dark places, because by doing that, You are making vibrational connections to these energies of control, these energies of suppression, and then you can break that vibration like a walking, talking Rife machine. Most people will know what I mean by that. A Rife machine where it tunes into the frequency of an illness or a health problem and breaks the frequency, and therefore the health problem disappears, because the basis of its very existence, its vibrational state, is gone. And it's not about running away from things that we don't like and situations that we'd rather not be happening. It's actually running straight at them and dealing with them rather than running away or acting as if they don't exist. You know, there's so many. See, the people have. There's a difference between simple and simplistic, and I see so many people have a simplistic view of the way things are, like good and bad, good and evil, light and dark. I mean, there are shades of gray here. It's not black and white.
One of the largest life forms on Earth is mycelium, and I was watching this in a Paul Stamets video, and I realized that when you were looking at this mycelium under an electron microscope, it looked very much like the neurons of the brain. And I'm just kind of wondering if the universal mind is somewhat like that. It's just a matter of we're having an opportunity now to make those connections.
Well, it has to be. I mean, again, everything's very simple when you get through the complexity.
I love that. It gives you some responsibility. Like, you're a neuron or you're a dendrite connection. Do your job because you're part of this universal whole.
Well, yeah. I mean, this virtual reality universe, and increasingly even some mainstream scientists are realizing this, is a hologram. It's all holographic. And holograms, of course, have the illusory appearance of three-dimensionality. When they're not, what it is, it's waveform. If you look at the photographic print of a holographic photograph, whatever, it's waveform. It looks like a fingerprint. And then when they fire the laser at the waveform, suddenly, miraculously, it seems, a apparently three-dimensional form is created. And even holograms that humans make, never mind the level of sophistication and advancement of the holographic universe, can look as solid as you and me. And they're now making digital holograms, and they're using them at conferences and stuff and exhibitions. And I've been reading some articles about this. People are frightened to walk through these digital holograms because they think they're solid. But they're not. It's all illusion. And the great, in fact, I was coming through Heathrow Airport about a year ago. I've been writing about this holographic stuff for ages. And the front cover of a magazine called New Scientist, which is an absolutely right in the center of mainstream scientific magazine in this country, had a front page feature headline which says, "You are a hologram projected from the edge of the universe." And I'm thinking, whoa, we're moving on here. But where I'm going with this is... one of the great characteristics of a hologram is that every part of the hologram is a smaller version of the whole. So if you get the holographic waveform print and you cut it into four and you fire the laser at each quarter, you don't get a quarter of the whole picture. You get a quarter-sized version of the whole picture. So... everything is a smaller version of the whole because of the way holograms work. All information is encoded everywhere. And so this is where you get the alternative methods of healing, like to an extent acupuncture, which can find points in the ear and other parts of the body which relate and can affect all the different organs of the body. This is where reflexology comes from, where you can find places on the hands, the feet, and all over the body where from that point you can affect the whole body or different parts of the body, like the heart or the lungs or whatever. It's because the body's a hologram. Now, if you take this forward up the other level, if we are holographic, I'm not saying we are holographic in terms of our eternal self, but this reality, this body computer is holographic, therefore... we must be a smaller part of the whole, just as smaller parts of our body are a smaller part of our whole. So therefore, if you keep going up, the human form and all these different, the animal form, the form of trees, the form of the planets, the form of the solar system, right up to the what I call the super hologram, which is the universe as a whole, every part within that super hologram must be a reflection in information terms and even more deeper levels of the super hologram. Therefore, the body, the brain, must be a smaller part of the whole. So what you're saying is perfectly logical when you come from that understanding.
So ultimately, I mean, what I've been finding is when everybody is given a lot of, I mean, giving the same facts and giving it, you know, without trying to hold things out, I've been amazed at how much how centrist we are when we come to our conclusions. So in essence, when they break us apart in these boxes, as you say, to keep us thinking differently, when in reality, you know, when we're connected, we're going to think pretty much close in thought, correct?
Well, we are all consciousness. Everyone is all consciousness. We are all different points of observation, different points of focus and awareness within the ocean. The conspiracy is designed to make us live our lives and perceive ourselves and the world as a disconnected droplet, not the ocean.
Okay.
As we open our minds, we open the droplet and access the ocean, then all possibility becomes available to us. And as we go through this, people do absolutely start to see things in the same way, because they're accessing the same information levels, and the more they open their mind, the higher the levels of information, awareness, knowledge, ability to love and perceive expands, and the whole thing moves forward. But yes, I mean, as people open their minds, they start to see the world in very similar ways, often using different language, but they're coming from the same point of view.
They're.
Because they're now accessing the same level of awareness and same level of consciousness.
But let's dissect this just a little, because when you say, Melody, that we have sort of a centrist viewpoint, I think it has to do with sort of like a common pool of ideas, where I think that, David, what you're getting at now is that people actually, as they leave that common pool, are converging on some very similar ideas. And I wonder, I mean, you are often referencing the limits of language as you continue this discussion, and I feel that is a very hidden thing, and that
language itself
to represent your infinite possibilities as you come upon them and leave behind the centrist pool of ideas, that's the challenge, because you're really given the same language pool, and so sort of reinventing language, abusing it, you know, doing something with it that's not triggering the same old thought reactions in other people's minds, even though you're trying to do something new with it.
I would say go beyond it, because it's my view that language was introduced to divide us and to bring us into five sense reality. You see, once upon a time, we used to communicate telepathically, and by that I don't mean I'm getting something. Did you say, so I'm kind of getting, did you say this? Not that level of telepathy. I mean, when we're reading each other's thoughts in a way that is just as clear as what we call language today. But what does that do? When you are interacting and communicating on an energetic thought, mind, consciousness level, what does that do? It holds you in a certain level of consciousness, because that's what you're communicating on. That's the wavelength you're operating on. Once you pull people into communicating through language, what is language? It's a vibration that connects into what? The five senses, and it pulls you in. And I think this universal story, I mean, it's a biblical story, but you find the same story wherever you go around the world, using different names and situations, of God, actually the gods, scrambling language and therefore, you know, keeping people apart and all the rest of it. There's a fundamental truth in that, and where I think we're beginning to move is more and more communicating on a deeper level, not yet on the level, and not for some time, where we're communicating in that telepathic way that I've just talked about, but we are feeling more and more rather than hearing or thinking. And what I mean by that is when I do these talks around the world, these 8-hour talks, and the number of psychic people in the audiences over the years who said to me, you know, why you were talking. Now, I'm completely unaware of this. I feel the energy around the theater, but I'm completely unaware of this in the sense that these psychics could see it. While I'm talking, there is an energetic connection between me and the audience, and the audience and me. It's an interaction, which is happening on an energetic level that is beyond the voice and ear. These levels of communication are starting to impose themselves more and more. It's a level where you don't just think it or work it out. That's what the mind and voice and all the rest of it does. It's where you just know. It's a knowing. It's intuition. It's an energetic connection where words are virtually superfluous because, yeah, I've got it. I feel it. I got it. I intuitively know it. And these are the levels that are now being, as people awaken, that these closed sensitivities that are starting to manifest themselves again. People are becoming more and more intuitive because they're starting to understand that we're not just five sense so-called physical beings. And with that awareness, these sensitivities that have been suppressed are now opening up again. And that's where the real communication is taking place between people.
You know, I think we're born with this, what you're talking about, and it's really highly discouraged, and we have to reconnect.
Exactly. And it's happening. It's happening. I've seen it happening all over the world. And, of course, once upon a time again, this was encouraged in the ancient societies, but more and more as this control system has kicked in, of course, it doesn't want people communicating on this level that they can't control. They want them communicating purely voice to ear, which is a level that they can understand and they can control and manipulate.
Well, I kind of get the feeling that they're kind of revealing their Achilles heel by the more that they struggle to try to control us, the more if we start looking at it, they have just exposed themselves more and more in the avenues that they fear the most.
This is a very important area because all this stuff you were talking about earlier, Melody, about fear and what have you. In fact, the control system does not have the power over humanity that humanity thinks it does or it thinks it has, because it's a house of cards, really. It's a house of cards that is based on us staying in a comatose state and perceiving and filtering and experiencing life through the five senses overwhelmingly. And once these guys that in the control system who understand this, not the gophers and the followers, but the people at the core, which is not that many, who understand this, they are terrified of humanity awakening. They really are, because they realize that we have such infinite potential once we get out of mind and into consciousness, and the control system falls as a result. And I've been saying for years that the relationship between those who are controlling and manipulating and those being manipulated is not one is all-powerful and omnipotent and the other is not. It's that the control system has simply manipulated humanity by the way it structured society and programmed humanity's sense of self in the world. It's put humanity, the target population, in a smaller box of perception and awareness than it's in. But it's in a box. You can't not be in a very small box when you are so frightened that you feel the need to control everybody and control everything. People in their true power and their true infinite state, they don't want to control everybody. They don't want to control anybody. Frightened people want to control events and other people because they're frightened of not being in control. I mean, you know, all the things we talk about in terms of humanity, then the control system is a reflection of that, or humanity is a reflection of the control system. So once we start to awaken to our true sense, then we go way beyond the box that the control system's in, and therefore the control system must lose its power.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of synchrony there in the whole discussion of a smaller box. When you think of Nelson Mandela or other people who have been inside, I mean, I personally have been privileged to see the inside of a jail here in Colorado, and I was astounded to see how much more mentally free a lot of the prisoners, unquote, were than the guards themselves, full of so much fear. And once you take, maybe you've experienced this as part of the public onslaught you got when you first, you know, in Britain were getting so much heat for what you were saying.
Yeah.
Once you lose what you think is, you know, kind of your prestige or, you know, your physical freedom to wander about, you really appreciate the freedom that you have mentally to choose your thoughts.
Yeah. What's that great line in that song, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose?
Yes.
And you know, this is a very, very important area you brought up, because attachment is one of the great forms of control, because and indeed self suppression. It's okay having relationships, and it's okay having things and possessions, as long as the situation serves your freedom. But once you become so attached to something, I mean, some of the most fearful people I've ever met have been some of the richest, because they've got so much money that they've got so much fear of losing it. And you think you've got all that money and you fret every day about not having it. And what is it giving you except it's controlling you? It's put you in your own prison, which is fear of losing your money. Fear of losing your partner, fear of this, fear of that, fear of the future. All these things are attachments which stop you expressing your true self. And, you know, I have this phrase I repeat so often these days to myself in my own life. It is what it is. It is what it is. And if I can change what is, because I want to change what is, then can I do it now? No, I can't. So I have to accept what is until I can. It means that you don't get attached to outcomes, which is another form of serious attachment, where you decide at point A that this is what you want to happen. What you've done immediately is set yourself up for disappointment, because unless that thing, that single thing that you say you want to happen happens, you're disappointed. It's like going to a football match and you desperately want one team to win. Unless that happens, you're going home disappointed. But if you go to the football match and all you want to do is enjoy the game, enjoy life symbolically, then whether it's win for your team or win for the other team or a draw or whatever, you've had a good day because you weren't attached to the outcome. And you know, the way I live my life is I do what I believe to be right the next time I decide an action. But I can tell you that I have no outcome in mind, not for the world, not for myself, but because the outcome, collectively and individually, will be decided by the series of decisions and actions I take and others take in the now, in the only moment that exists. And the future, what we call the future, will take care of the outcome, will take care of itself on the basis of what we keep doing in our everyday lives all the time. And I'm happy with, you know, the outcome is the outcome. I'm not attached to what it is. I'm just determined to do what I feel is right in the moment, and then the next moment, and the next moment.
I think I believe I heard it in one of your prior interviews, something to the effect, if you don't speak your truth, or the more you speak your truth, the more that becomes your reality. Does that ring true to familiar with what something said in one of your prior interviews? Because, I mean, it really struck me, because a lot of us seem to hold back in speaking our truth. But once it seems like the more I've gotten used to speaking my truth, the more it has become easier for me to say it, particularly in an environment that might be a little bit contrary to my thoughts.
But, and don't you think it's like, at first you sort of speak your truth and you have a little tension of like, oh, what are they going to say? And maybe you run away. And then the next time you speak your truth and you stay there, and then you're like, oh, you know, no one really smacked me so hard. And then next time you speak your truth and you just stare someone right in the eye and you laugh, you know?
Yeah, it's about... It's a whole process of deprogramming you're talking about, because I reckon that if you ask most people in the world, give me your top three or your top five biggest fears, one of them would be speaking in public. And the reason for that is people live in a tiny prison called fear of what other people think. And when you do that, you are no longer your true self. You are living your life, speaking your words, having your views or not having them on the basis of what other people's belief systems say. In other words, you're going through this process of what will this person say or do if I say this, which I really believe? So what you're saying is, I'm going to suppress myself to within the belief system of the person I'm talking to because I fear their reaction. And the reason that people are overwhelmingly frightened of speaking in public is because the audience is controlling them because they are speaking and thinking, oh my goodness, what will the audience think? And they're looking around thinking, are they attentive? Are they not? Are they laughing where they should? Or are they thinking I'm stupid? You know, are they looking around and looking at their watches and all this stuff? And what you're doing is allowing the audience to control your state of being, to control what you say, what you don't say, how you feel about yourself. Once you let go of that fear of what other people think, and I seems a strange word, fortunate, but the massive ridicule I went through in Britain in the early 1990s, I mean, it was colossal. It actually set me free of the fear of what other people thought because, you know, they think I'm crazy anyway. They think I'm all this anyway. So I'm just going to be me. And if they don't like it, well, you can do the other thing. That's why I wrote a book at the time called I Am Me, I Am Free. And when you do that, you can stand up in front of 100 people or 100,000 people, and it doesn't matter because you're speaking your truth, which is your right, and the audience has the right to react to what you're saying in the way that it sees fit because it has the right to express its uniqueness in the way it reacts to what you're saying. And therefore, when you speak your truth without fear of what other people think, you free yourself of editing what you say, editing your view, editing your lifestyle, and you express who you are and not what other people say you must be.
So has your intent changed any from when you started out to what you're trying to accomplish now? Although it's apparent that you have just a tremendous schedule that you keep.
Well, this is my life, you know. I mean, I work like 12-hour days and write books and articles and the website, and then I go traveling and talking for about 4 or 5 months of the year at least. And people say, you want to have something else in your life, mate. You know, it's not all work. And I'm thinking, what? This is my life. It's here to do. I mean, do I want to sit on a beach, chill out? And I don't want to. Right. I want to find out more than I know an hour ago. I love my life because I'm doing what I want to do. And in terms of my intent, no, it's not changed. What has changed is my understanding of things, which has increased over 20 years. If it hasn't, what have I been doing? And the more detail that I understand. But my intent is simply to understand who am I, where am I, what are we doing here, what are the forces that control our lives and experience, and what can we do to take the power back for ourselves and break that control system? That's been my intent for 20 years, still is.
But have you found the answers there?
Well, more and more answers, yeah. I mean, to be honest, Melody, this book that's now at the printers, when it comes out in April or May, it's going to have quite an impact in many ways because I've taken another step forward in my understanding of how this control system works and where it's coming from and who's doing it and how they manipulate reality. And there's going to be many people in the conspiracy research arena who are going to say the guy's crazy and that's ridiculous. There's going to be people in the system are going to say condemnatory things, and there are going to be other people who are going to say, oh my goodness, that makes so much sense of the world we live in. I've reached a point now where I've just, if you like, stepped across another Rubicon to another level of understanding. Not because I'm a genius or more special than anyone else, but 20 years ago, I was contacted through a psychic by some level of consciousness and told that I was going to go out and do this. When I was presenting sport for the BBC at the time, and I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I'm going to go out and do this, because I'm not. But it's all happened. And this consciousness, if you like, speaks to me through intuition, a knowing, and through a synchronistic series of events that put me in a certain place to see or come across information. And I've learned over the years to see when a certain sequence of events is saying, hey, look at this, look at this. And over the last 6 months, I've been on this journey of incredible synchronicity and experience that has led me to understand another stage of this. And it is extraordinary. I can tell you it's extraordinary, but it makes so much sense of what's going on.
And the name?
The book is called Human Race, Get Off Your Knees. Which is what we need to do now. Like I said earlier, you know, if your head's in the sand, you must be on your knees. And humanity has spent far too long on its knees with its hands clasped together looking up. We need to get on our feet, and we need to look life and everyone else in the eye, because we are all expressions of the same consciousness, none greater or lesser than anybody else. And it's time to understand that. But within that title is just an absolute mass of connected dots across all levels of awareness, if you like, from the five senses through to higher levels of consciousness. And then there's this particularly new information which explains how this control system can work in the way it does, and how humanity's collective mind can be taken over. And like I say, it's going to get quite a reaction, pleasant and unpleasant. But then again, no one said it would be easy.
And you also have a DVD that you've been promoting on your website that you've done with a number of people. Is that the Fall of the Republic or something?
Fall of America.
Western
World.
Yeah, I've done a few DVDs where I've been on DVDs with other people, and but I'm speaking in London at the Brixton Academy, which is a big theatre, 2,500 people, in May, on May the 10th, and I'll be doing a DVD version of that, which will bring in all this information that's in the new book. So it's going to be quite a year, but it's great. It's so great, because when I look back 20 years ago, and this is kind of almost a special time for me, because on March the 31st, 1990, coming up to exactly 20 years ago, I walked into a psychic's front room, because I'd been feeling over a year that there was a presence around me that I didn't understand. And I wanted to go and see a psychic to see if she would pick up what was happening. I didn't tell her any of this, and she did. And I was told in that room that day, or on the third visit there anyway, that I was going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets, which, like I said earlier, I thought you were having a laugh. I introduced the sport on the BBC, mate. I mean, what are you talking about? But it's happened. And when I look back 20 years at the world and people's awareness, and I look at it now, I just want to scream with joy, because there is such an awakening going on. And it's so pleasing to me, because 20 years ago I was told about what I now call the truth vibrations. This vibrational change that was going to change human perception. And my goodness, the truth vibrations are there to see now in vastly and so increasingly quickly changing human perception.
Now, one thing I would wonder about is, are there those out there that think that they are purporting the truth, but maybe have connected with some avenues that might be deflecting it away from this awakening? Or is that even something to be cognizant? I can't even say the word.
Yeah, do you ever feel like that's happened to you, that someone's trying to steer your results, your presentation, to make it look a little worse, maybe turn people off to it, you know, like tweak the reptilian thing or whatever, to make people just kind of go, oh, this is all, well...
Well, no, I mean... I have had a very simple philosophy all these years, which is, if I believe it to be true, and if it's supported by the evidence and it's supported by the synchronicity of my life, which I've learned to understand because it's happened for 20 years now. If I don't understand it more now than what I've been doing again, then I'll put it out there. See, if I was saying, as some people have, well, I'm aware of this, but I'm not going to say it because we're back to our conversation of a few minutes ago. What will people think? Then what's the point of that? So when I started coming across this reptilian stuff, not because I sat in a darkened room and thought, I think this is what's going on. I've come across vast amounts of information all over the world over the last 15 years or maybe a bit less than that with the reptilians. Therefore, I've spoken about it. And the more that my life moves on, the more clearly it is that this is a fundamental part of understanding what's going on. And just because people were going to immediately dismiss it or ridicule it, which they did when I first came out with it, doesn't mean that I'm not going to say it just because of that. And it's interesting that when I put reptilian extraterrestrials and words to that effect in a search engine in 1997, when I wrote a book called The Biggest Secret, which I talked about this for the first time, there was literally a handful of pages on the web, a very, very small, almost insignificant. You put reptilian extraterrestrial or interdimensional or something like that in now, there's tens and tens of thousands of them. And what it is, I decided amid the great ridicule of 20 years ago that the worst thing I could do, because I realized by then that we were consciousness and internal consciousness, and this was just one experience. I thought to myself, what's the worst I can do here? I can completely mess up one lifetime in this reality. That's the worst I can do. Well, okay, I'm up for that. I'll take that as the worst case scenario. And that's why I've gone on through the years saying things that I knew when I said them was going to get ridicule and condemnation and all the rest of it. But if someone doesn't say them and they stay unsaid, then nothing changes. You know, someone's got to say these things, not just for the sake of it, but because they believe them to be right, so that even the reaction of condemnation and ridicule has started that information circulating, if you follow me.
Definitely. And that's what you're getting back to the statement I made earlier, and that I have definitely found in, say, like some of these false flag events and that have taken place. I have found that just going out on the internet and just posing a few questions, how it has grown legs. It's amazing.
Well, I have this saying, you can't unhear something. And this is why people that ridiculed me mercilessly in the early 1990s are now reading my books, because you can't unhear something. But to have that effect, which you're talking about there, it has to be said. And if you're going to say it in a world that has a narrow view of reality and possibility, then don't come running to me and saying, look what they're saying about me. Well, listen, you got a choice. You keep your mouth shut, you'll be fine. But if you open your mouth, then don't start complaining about what people are saying about you, because look at the world you're living in. Of course they're going to say that, because from their perspective, you are crazy and you are to be condemned or whatever. So if you're going to do it, then you've got to accept the consequences of that, which is, you know, some of them can be unpleasant. But once it's said, it cannot be unsaid. Once it's heard, it cannot be unheard. And if what you're saying has validity, then eventually it will be shown to be so. And those who heard before and dismissed it will say, hold on a second, didn't that guy say that? Didn't this lady say that? And suddenly the world changes. But if you didn't say it to start with, nothing changes. One of the big reasons that people have turned to my books in the last few years is because what was in the earlier books is now happening on the TV news. If I hadn't have said that earlier, then there would have been no relevance to my work at all by what's happening in the world today. Same with many other people. It's not just me. God, there's loads of people doing this. And therefore, we need to have that initially courage to overcome the fear of doing it. But once you go beyond fear, you don't need courage, because courage is just to overcome fear. And it, to say it, to accept the consequences and think, okay, well, if it has validity, it will be shown eventually to be so. If it doesn't have validity, well, I shouldn't be saying it anyway.
Well, you know, when it comes down to it, I think one of the things that keeps me going is understanding that there's an end game going on. But I'm also seeing beyond that. Do you?
Oh, I'm ironically very, very confident about the outcome of events. The truth vibrations are not coming in for the sake of it. They're coming in to transform this reality from a control system to a state of infinitely greater awareness, love, perception, unity, understanding that we're all one. All this is what it's doing. And, you know, I talked earlier about when you are moving from one perception to another, your life seems to fall apart because the old construct that your old vibrational electromagnetic state was creating is changing to the new, and in that transition, the old, quote, falls apart. Well, there are collective, there's a collective version of this going on now, in my view, and what we're seeing is the control system appears to be doing things to get more and more control, and on one level it is, and will seem to be doing so for a while yet. But on another level, because, you know, people think that if you look at it from this level, that's the only way of looking at it. There's multiple levels of observation where the same thing looks very different. From a higher level of perception, I would say that what we're seeing is the breaking down of the old collective energetic electromagnetic construct, which is manifest as what we call the collective human experience, the world we live in and experience. And again, it's going to seem like not our lives are falling apart, because we're talking collectively, that the world is falling apart. It's what it's going to seem like. Oh my goodness, the world's falling apart. Look what's happening. What's actually falling apart and going to be falling apart is the energetic waveform construct from which this holographic daily experience is manifest. And as it does, the old world will collapse and a new one will take its place, which will be the new world. And not the new world order, which these controlling freaks think they're going to create, but the new world of created from a higher level of perception and awareness. But in the playing out of this, it's going to seem, A, the world is falling apart, and two, that the control system is getting more and more control, and oh my goodness me, Big Brother's got control of the world. And then at some point, within my lifetime, and I'm 58 in April, this whole control system is going to collapse, because the energetic construct that's holding the house of cards together is being dismantled by the truth vibrations. And when you have a dam, it can take a long time for the cracks to appear. But once the cracks appear, it can collapse very quickly. And we're moving every day closer and seeing more and more cracks appear in this control system. And the point's coming where it's going to collapse. And then the challenge will be, okay, now we need to take the world forward in a different way. And so I think it's the world's going to be very different, but it's going to be a much nicer place to live. The control system is not going to control our children's and grandchildren's life for the rest of their time here. It's not. It's going to seem so for a few years, and then it's coming down. Wonderful time to be alive.
Well, I view control as a disease or the disease, and I'm, as far as your website, would you like to kind of get in what you had, your intent when you redesigned it, and what a great place to connect with a lot of different information?
Well, it's kind of synchronistic again, because this new book, like I say, is at the printers now, be out in a few weeks. It's a new stage of my life that this begins, and we've been working to redesign the website for ages, but it just happened to drop in the same period that it happened. It's one heck of a lot more easy to navigate now and access the information. What happened with the old one is that it started in a small way a long time ago and then gradually kind of bit, you know, we've got an airport in London called Heathrow, and it's a mess. It's a mess. It's a mess because it started out in the early days of aviation as a small airport, and then they built bits on it and built bits on it and built bits on it. It's a total mess. Everyone's been through Heathrow. It's a nightmare. And then you get the other airports where they start with a blank sheet of land and they design the airport in the best, most effective way. And that's what we've done with this website now. So it's going to be much easier for people to go there and get what they want.
Might I suggest, I noticed that you had for your subscription rate, it was done in pounds, and there's some of us that don't quite know that conversion rate.
All right. That's about, what's that, about $4 now, I suppose, something like that. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But, growing.
I'll get the webmaster to look at that. It's a good point, yeah.
And as far as what are you offering in that subscription?
Oh, well, I write a newsletter every week, which is a researched article either on the events of that week or on some aspect of this whole multiple level web of subjects. And I do that every week. And there's other things as well. But what I concentrate on, I let all the other people deal with that. I'm not interested in the logistics. I'm not interested in all that stuff. I leave that to the webmaster. Get on with it. My interest and my focus is gathering information and communicating it. And I don't really go beyond that.
Well, and you've done an excellent job at it.
Yeah, I say, you know, your real friends are the ones that tell you the truth, and you're certainly a friend to all of us by being brave enough to tell your truths.
Well, the one thing I will say, I'm not claiming that everything I say is right, because you're trying to uncover something that doesn't want to be uncovered across a vast range of subjects. But what I can say, in all honesty, that when I say it, I believe it to be true.
Well, the number one truth that you've put into my brain over the years is just the title of your one book, where it's Infinite Love is the Only Truth. Everything else is illusion. I don't know how many times that has just synchronistically returned at just the perfect moment. And I guess, you know, if I may, I'd like to, in chapter 5, you open off with a quote from Oscar Wilde, and this is my experience today in speaking with you, is that on an occasion of this kind, it becomes more than a moral duty to speak one's mind. It becomes a pleasure. It's certainly been a pleasure to speak with you today, David.
Well, thanks very much. It's very kind. And, you know, we're all part of this, you know, and you're part of this. Everyone who's communicating this information is part of this. You know, we're a vast interconnected team, if you like, all over the world. And anyone joins the team when they decide I'm gonna speak my truth and I'm going to open my mind to other possibilities. And as we do that, then more and more people change not just the vibration of themselves, they change the vibration of the planet. And the control system absolutely depends on a low vibrational environment, because the control system, the consciousness behind the control system is low vibrational because of it needs to control, it wants to control, therefore it's in a low vibrational state. The two go together. So the more that we open ourselves and open our own vibrational state, the more the control system will be losing its power and will eventually come down. And it's coming down. Funnily enough, it's in the process of coming down now. It just doesn't look like it.
Well, I really have to thank you very much for your patience and then also just coming on our while we get this sound thing straightened out. But I
don't understand technology. I wish you all the best with that one.
We're learning it.
My friend is a high-level IT professional, calls them confusers, F-U-S-E-R, confusers. And certainly it was like that today.
Yeah, good one.
But I really want to thank you for enlightening our audience, and I hope that we can do this again sometime.
Yeah, that'd be a pleasure. And, thanks very much indeed.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dave.
We can cut this off any time that we want, but for... For a secondary blurb, I wonder, David, I don't know if you've seen Melody's huge list of guests from all different aspects, nutrition and science,
right.
People, you know, John Lear, you know, really interesting things coming about, you know, aliens and that, some of it crossovers into your work, and a lot of the time, I feel like what you just said about opening yourselves up by vibrationally, that's what happens when we're on the air with these people. You know, they're real people, and we're talking with them. And, you know, Melody really draws them out to just, you know, conversationally start going, and yet a lot of their information contradicts. And as we go off to do some more interviews, and you know, there's certainly a full slate of more people discussing it, what as a media consultant to this project, what would you say are the kind of intents to hold while we're deciphering, you know, lest we be confused of just being all completely positive? You know, what is the way to take a look at what people are saying and really decipher it for the truth?
Well, all you can do is, on an intellectual level, is look at the evidence, and even more important, on an intuitive level, feel it. You know, someone once said to me years ago, who was an insider, he said, look, you've quoted a disinformer in your book. I said, all right. He said, yeah, but you've only quoted him on the bit that's true. How do you do that? And it's very simple. That part that I quoted felt right to me. Other things the guy said did not. And this intuition, which we all have, but mind overwhelms it and contradicts it, because the mind doesn't want intuition ruling the perception. It wants to do it itself. But this intuition is just it, and this is the intuitive level that they can't manipulate because it's outside of their vibrational box. So someone can look at you in the face and can smile in the right places, tell you what you want to hear, just like used car salesmen do. And they can manipulate you that way because, oh, he's a nice chap. And if you feel them or feel information or feel a situation rather than think it, then you'll say, yeah, he seemed okay, but there's just something not right there. I did feel good about that guy. And this way, you can reduce the number of times you get manipulated and scammed.
Well, one of the other things that I kind of feel is important to sometimes even put out somebody that you may not agree with in any fashion, or you might feel is putting out disinfo, because who am I to judge what the public should hear in the respect that, you know, they need to hear it so they can decipher whether it is their truth or not.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, what I do is put out information personally. I'm not attached to how it's received, not least because it's none of my business. You know, if I'm attached to how people receive, for instance, what I say, then what I'm saying is you must believe me. And how dare you not believe me? how people react to it is their right, their choice. And that applies to everybody. And let people hear all versions, and then they can decide their own truth. Rather than take someone else's truth off the shelf, off the peg.
Right. I mean, they should all go out there and embrace the fact of looking for what else corroborates it or shoots it down. But you know, I really don't want to. If I'm questing for truth, you know, I've got to turn over a lot of stones to find what.
But you also have to choose whom you interview. And
well, yeah,
you and I discuss. You know, do we think this person, you know, I mean, their intent seems honest, but are they perhaps being managed, you know?
Well, there's a lot of managed stuff in this arena, and of course, why wouldn't there be? You know, when you are trying to put out information that is challenging the control system, exposing the control system, and that's what I'm doing. I'm not fighting the control system. I don't want to fight anybody. What you fight, you become. This is why so many, every kind of revolution that's brought about by violence creates a control system after the revolution that is pretty much like the one before, because the same mentality that was before is now still there, but it's just called a different name. I'm just putting information out there, and like I say, how it's received is completely up to the people receiving it. And if it has validity, then that information and that person will eventually become more and more accepted as someone who's speaking some kind of truth. If it's not got validity, then eventually people will be seen to be manipulating and all the rest of it. But in the the case of the control and the manipulation of this arena, of course, when you're dealing with something that's putting out information that you don't want people to know, you are going to place people and organizations within that arena that are going to deflect, divert, suppress, and target those within the arena who are putting out stuff that you don't want people to hear. So it is a minefield or a mind field, this whole arena. The UFO arena is, the conspiracy arena is, it all is, because there are people in there trying to speak what they believe to be the truth, and then they're all the agencies with people in there to try to suppress and misdirect the truth. And it's intuition that gets you through it, not mind.
Yeah, so the more you exercise it, the more you get a little bit better at being able to field out that stuff.
You do, because what happens, it's like in everything, the more you use it, the better it gets. well, up to a point. So therefore, the more you use your intuition, the more you start to feel bodily vibrational differences between when something feels right and something doesn't feel right. And you can, if you really get it sensitive, someone can say a sentence and you could feel yes about that part of the sentence and no about that part. Because, you know, it's about getting that sensitivity back that everyone has, but mind and programming suppress, so we don't feel it and don't hear it. And when you do, you can work yourself through this minefield. It doesn't mean you're always going to be 100% correct, no. But it means you're going to be correct the vast majority of the time, because you're accessing that level of awareness, consciousness, that has that understanding of whether something's correct or not. Mind is so easy to manipulate if you stay in that.
Well, David, again, I want to thank you very much, and keep doing what you're doing, because it's obviously getting a good foothold there. And your website is davidicke.com. And again, I want to thank you.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you very much. Lovely talking to you.